With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with George Eliason, live from Donbas, Ukraine, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, welcome to Friday. It's George Eliason. I want to cover a little bit of news, and then we're going to bring our guest on. I wanted to get into Kherson a little bit because there's some confusion about what's going on. Now, Russia is evacuating Kherson still. They're moving across the river. Now, part of this is because early on, one of the commanders set up a few situations like Izium, where they had the city near Kharkiv, and then they had to retreat because they couldn't defend the position. Now, because of the strategic situation with dams north of Kherson that weren't taken, I guess would be the word for it, they needed to pull back because Ukraine is threatening to open up a dam and flood the area dramatically with water, which would kill not just the citizens, but it would drown all the equipment and the army. So pulling back on the other side of the river as they regroup, a new commander came in, and he's resetting the battlefield as the new mobilization is going on. Now, Ukraine is taking advantage of this by having the ability to walk into basically an empty city and declaring it a massive victory for themselves. So this is, honestly, you know, that's just the way this war is running. And my expectation is that after everything settles here, and as the frost starts settling in, which is probably another month, we're going to see some dramatic changes in the field of operations. Now, today on the show, we've got Richard Battle. He's a fifth-generation Texan and a longtime Lone Star State business and community leader and award-winning author. His latest book, Made in America by Americans, Not Americans. Richard is an award-winning author, and he's a frequent media guest. Richard, hello, how are you?
Good morning, George. Thank you so much for having us with you, and God bless the Ukrainians.
Well, okay. Let's talk about your book. Now, Made in America by Americans instead of Americans. And that's Americans. Yeah. We're talking about the American spirit here. And I guess the difference between what? A time before now and now, today, you know, under Democratic leadership? Is that what we're looking at?
Made in America by Americans, not Americans, celebrates the American-do spirit that's infused our country since its beginning. And it's under threat, and it's not as strong as it used to be currently. And there are people who are trying to create the impression that government is what makes a country. And to me, it's the American-do spirit of individuals over our history that have created our prosperity and success and will continue to do so, because stronger Americans makes America stronger. Stronger government makes weaker Americans.
Now, we can go back. I mean, I came of age in the 80s. I mean, everything was hopeful. Reagan was in. I look back. I actually, at one point, I thought, you know, it's been quite a while. Was that the first election I voted in? No, it was actually George Bush. directly after him. But it was a different time. It was a different feel in America. Is that the kind of atmosphere you're talking about recreating? What needs to happen?
Well, somewhat, because if we look back, I'm old enough to remember when both parties believed in America and the America
exactly.
that could achieve what it wanted to. And both parties lifted up people to try to pursue their dreams independently of government support. John F. Kennedy, in his inaugural speech in 61, said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." He united the country and set a goal to put a man on the moon within the decade, which was achieved. And that's the way you unite a country. Ronald Reagan, I saw him once in person, and every other time I saw him speak, I always felt like he was speaking to me personally. And it was a very inspirational speech about what we as individual Americans could do to succeed individually, and what each individual does helps the country succeed. And today, politicians on both sides of the spectrum, all they talk about is what they, quote unquote, the government are going to do for the citizens. And the government cannot do anything without taking away from the citizens financially or freedom to do it. And that's what I'm trying to argue against. I want liberty for individuals. Our founders advocated and spoke about liberty incessantly, which is part of the reason they're being attacked and canceled today. Liberty, individual liberty, is paramount for a free society.
How do you, we're going to be end up flipping back and forth between time frames, but how do you see, how did the current situation creep? I mean, where did it begin?
It has during my lifetime substantially. And I think part of it began after World War II. And I can believe there are several things that have contributed to it. David Brinkley, in his book, When Washington Goes to War, pointed out that the withholding tax on payroll began to help finance World War II. And it brought in tons mm-hmm. of money to help win that war financially. And at the end of the war, they cut the budget, but they didn't cut the taxes. And so all of a sudden, there's all this money pouring into Washington, and the politicians realized that the taxpayers weren't asking for it back. And so they said, well, I guess they want us to spend it. And that began the spending spree that we're still experiencing now. President Nixon in 1971 took the United States off the gold standard. And that's mm-hmm. what launched deficit spending that we see today, that's crippling us and will really hurt us in the future. The professional politician class that really took off more so after World War II, our country was founded on a citizen self-governance where people would sacrifice their careers and families and go to the state house or Washington for 2 or 4 years, serve as a public servant, and then go home. Well, the professional political class has created this environment that government's too complicated. Leave it to us, trust us, and don't ask any questions, and we'll take care of everything. Well, the professional political class are not public servants. They act as rulers and treat us as subjects and not citizens. And I believe that we as citizens need to reclaim our rights and liberties, and we have to execute our responsibilities to be able to do that.
Oh, I agree 100% on that. But even, you know, you have people like Biden that, I mean, I remember him running in the 80s, and he, you know, even the Democrats themselves rejected him. You know, you had the whole plagiarism thing going on. There's still, I mean, it's still almost night and day. How much to the situation do you think that the Clinton presidency contributed?
Well, I think every president's during my lifetime, at least during the since Ronald Reagan has contributed to where we're moving, which is bigger government, a more globalist participation in the world, ruling by elites, Republicans and Democrats. I think Ronald Reagan was the last one who fought against that. I believe Donald Trump did as well, but every other one since then has been part of this globalist ruling elite that wants the United States to be one of many countries and take away our individual sovereignty and our exceptionalism.
Well, that's exactly what's on the table right now, too.
Yes, you know, our election we just had, in my opinion, and the elections that we have going forward are not the old Democrat versus Republican, where both parties were patriots and loved America. To me, it's the global elites and the ruling class against the citizen self-governance. And that's what the argument is. Donald Trump framed it as MAGA or America First. And I agree, however you want to name it, it's much bigger than he is. We who believe that the United States should retain its independent sovereignty and freedom from being just part of the global community as one of many countries.
Yeah, essentially just another state within within a larger entity. And you really can't, you lose a lot of sovereignty. Or all of sovereignty.
Yes, and one of the questions I ask is, why would we want to give up that sovereignty that millions of people are illegally crossing our borders to find to get what they're running away from?
Well, honestly, you don't see that as just another Democratic ploy. First encouraging them, telling them, the cell phones and the reception they got, the encouragement along the way. You don't think it started as a political, pure political move on the part of the Democrats?
Well, I think it's political, but I think it's much bigger than that. And I've been on the border. I was married to a lady from Laredo, Texas for 20 years. So it's not a racial situation like some people make it out to be. They've intercepted illegal aliens on the Texas border at the Rio Grande from 150 countries. So people from all over the world are coming here. And it's not an accident. And I've been arguing this since January 20th of 2021. It's very purposeful. Our government is doing it. They're financing it and bringing people in by the millions to change the country. Part of it is political, but I believe part of it's part of this global goal to make the United States one of many countries, not the exceptional country it is today.
Well, I think, I've looked into it a little bit, but, you know, in terms of what it would do to the electorate, and it would actually change it quite a bit and turn it into, more or less a permanent Democratic Party cabal. I think that's what they were aiming at.
Well, that's one of the attempts, but I think when educated, legal immigrants who've come to the United States and become citizens are generally very family oriented, hardworking, industrious, conservative people. The Hispanic population's very family oriented, faith based, religious people as well, and conservative. When they understand the differences of economic and political freedom versus being a subject to a government rule, they will pick freedom every time. One of the things I say is there's no kid that ever wanted to grow up and be a socialist. Everyone wants freedom. And it's only when they buy the fake of this equity that's being sold to try to make everyone equal with their outcomes, which is a very seductive argument, is there a threat to our liberty? When they understand the difference, everyone wants liberty. And that's what we have to educate people on. That's what Made in America by Americans, not Americants, the essays, and there's ideas in there to try to help people be better citizens, live richer and more free lives.
Well, it's kind of a shame. When I was in high school, they used to have a class called civics back then. And they actually canceled the class the year I was supposed to take civics, which is, you know, you're learning about how the government runs, learning about citizenship, you know. And the fact that, you know, you need essays now in a book to be able to define that, I mean, it says a lot about where our society is. And, you know, it's definitely needed. What you're talking about is definitely needed today. And it's, quite frankly, it's refreshing that somebody's doing it.
Well, I think there's a lot of people in the fight, so to speak, to try to reestablish citizenship and civics and teaching the history of the country. And I have over 250 examples in Made in America by Americans, Not Americans, of the people worthy of emulation to counter this cancel culture, because there is a war going on currently for the hearts and minds of people. And we have to re-educate people. And I don't say that from an indoctrination standpoint, but if people learn today's Veterans Day, and if they learn about Alvin York, the hero of World War I, or they learn about Audie Murphy, a hero of World War II, and they learn of Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, go back and read the founders, and they talked about liberty and the gift they gave us. And when I was growing up a little earlier than you, it sounds like, it was easy to take it for granted. My mother would say, hey, don't take it for granted. And that's what I've come to realize, that I can't stand still and assume it will be there for my daughter and her family if I do nothing. I have to fight to make sure we pass it along to the next generations. And each of us have a responsibility. My late friend and mentor and former Attorney General of Texas, John Ben Shepherd, said, to be born free is an accident. To live free is a responsibility, but to die free is an obligation. And I feel that responsibility now while I have time to be in the fight to preserve liberty.
All right, Richard, we've got to take a quick break right now, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. This is TNT Talk Radio. We've got Richard Battle, the author of Made in America by Americans, Not Americans. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
You should hear what Hesher is talking about.
Pennsylvania taxpayers have paid $16 million for childhood sex reassignment treatments. Wow. Okay. It's funny. Isn't that funny how, I don't know if funny is the right word, but it's a little disturbing how the government, state governments and federal government, are insisting that all of us, all Americans, have to actually not only support this, we have to pay for it. We have to pay for this stuff, which is just unbelievable. I would guess that even many of those people out there that are into this, that support this, the dyed-in-the-wool, insane progressives, I would argue that maybe even, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, they would have not even seen this coming. They would have not seen, what? No, I'm not giving tax dollars to that.
Hesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's H-E-L-P-P-V-A.org.
This is TNT Radio, where you meet the entire menagerie of mankind and some who haven't yet been cataloged. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, for a complete list of shows and our schedule offered on TNT Radio, simply visit our website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction, truth from propaganda, right here on TNT Radio. Now, Richard, you're talking about waking up the woke culture. I mean, is it possible at this point?
Well, I think it's possible, yes. And shame on us if we don't try, because we've been gifted, as I said earlier, we stand on the shoulders of generations of Americans who made our country what it is and gifted it to us. I mean, they gave us this incredible gift that no one in the country, no one in the world, no one in history has ever had before. And it's up to us to buck up and do the right thing for future generations so we don't sentence them to the poverty and slavery of the rest of the world. And every one of us has a responsibility. Now, the people that have awakened, the biggest challenge is being overwhelmed by there's so many things that need to be done. I can't do very much. And so my argument is none of us can do everything, but each of us can do one thing. And so I urge everyone, pick one thing that's a passion for you and get involved in it and make a difference in it. And I'm encouraged when I see the number of school boards who have been changed by parental involvement in the last year or two. And that's the greatest sign, because then we can modify the curriculum, add the civics class back, re-educate people and inspire them on the rights and responsibilities of citizenship, make them proud of this country again. And then once they're proud of it and know how exceptional it is, then they will want to extend that to their children and grandchildren, just like our forebears did.
Well, you know, going into, you know, let's say we're looking at forward to 2024 now. Well, we could actually start right now. We're going to find out the results of the midterms probably, what, in a month or so now, which is a shame in itself. Let's say you do have the slim majority Congress, Senate. We may end up there. What can they start doing at that level to start? You know, I know you're talking about smaller government, and yes, I agree with you, but some of this has to start at government to make the provisions to actually cancel the cancel culture. You know, whether it's getting, you know, media back on track so you can actually have fact-based media again, you know, that's mainstream. What do you see happening? Let's say with the school systems, what can they do?
Well, and that's part of it. I'm really glad you asked that question. And there's multiple answers on it. No one I've heard define the swamp that's ruling us. And my definition of the swamp is we're governed by professional politicians, four professional lobbyists, executed by career bureaucrats and protected by the career media. And that syndicate, yes, we need to break it up. But one of the things I hope happens, since 1913, the power grab by the United States government from the states has been breathtaking, starting with the amendment to elect senators directly. And the states created the United States.
I was hoping you'd go there.
And while Congress may not have the strength to do what's necessary, I hope that the states will start exercising their power again, banding together, suing the federal government, and taking power back to the states, because the best government's the government closest to us because they're the most responsive to us. If you try to communicate with a congressman or a senator, the first thing they want to know is, are you their constituent? And if you're not, they don't care what you have to say unless it comes in the form of a check. And so we need people that we can communicate with to represent us and have more power. So that's a very important component. The illustration of that is the increase in executive orders by presidents of both parties over time, bypassing the Congress. And to me, so much of that is unconstitutional, but there's been an insufficient number of lawsuits to try to stop that power grab in the past. And I hope that that will change and that will rebalance the government. And doing that will bring more power back locally and hopefully be a start.
Now, do you think, you know, you mentioned the Senate, the election, how the senators are elected. Now, a lot of people don't realize that they used to be appointed.
Well, they were elected by state legislatures, or the states would appoint them based on state law. And I think it was the 19th Amendment, but I could be wrong, in 1913, made for the direct election of senators. And on the surface, that seems great because it gives you and me a vote for our senator. But in doing so, it took power away from the states, and we elect the state representatives, and their appointing or electing a senator from their state was a way to keep the senators accountable to the state, not just to Washington. And right now, the power is actually in the leaders of the parties, because they raise in the Senate and congressional campaign contributions. And that's why you see straight party line voting in both chambers, because the leaders have all the money. And if you don't vote the way they tell you to, then they're going to primary you and load up the cash on your opponent. And with that kind of representation, basically you're governed by four people in the Congress: the majority leader, minority leader, Speaker of the House, and minority leader in the House.
Now, you know, that's really incredible. Now, you know, with that, in some states, the governor actually had a power of recall for the senator, too. Isn't that correct?
Yes, each state has different laws, and that could happen. And I think the states taking power where they have constitutional and legal authority, I think, is something worth considering, because we need people who will represent the constituents, not just themselves and the swamp, if you will.
Yeah. I agree with you 100%. It's like the Senate's become like a fourth independent branch of government. You know, they do what they want after they're elected, fairly, you know, pretty much. Taking power back to the states, you know, empowering the governors, et cetera, okay, or them demanding it, you know, which happens, you know, in our history from time to time. How do you think that will help change the culture, I guess, back to what? What would you term it as? A slice of middle America, or...
Well, and that's part of it. I think that our founders, they did not have an emotional revolution like the French. It was logical. They enumerated their complaints in the Declaration of Independence. When they won independence, they studied governments throughout history for what worked and what didn't. And they gave us this beautiful government because they understood human nature, and that no one person or small group should have too much power. And by dividing the power with the checks and balances, that was a beautiful solution. People have railed about the Electoral College, but that was ingenious because it protects the small states. Because without the Electoral College and just with a popular vote, all you need to do is campaign in a handful of cities and win a handful of cities or states, and you can ignore everyone else, not only during the election, but for the years in between. And so having people accountable that are elected and being servants as citizens is much more important than the professional politicians. And that's what I would argue for. William F. Buckley, the late, great William F. Buckley, said he'd rather be led by the first 500 people in the New York City phone book than by Congress. And that expressed the trust in the people. I would rather have someone who's a truck driver or a custodian in Congress right now than a professional politician who's never had a job in the private sector. We have too many of them that go to college, come straight out of college, go into politics. They've never run as much as a lemonade stand, and yet they're legislating the private sector. And I would rather have people representing me who understand human nature and who have experience, real world experience in life, making those decisions.
Well, you know, the fact that the Biden administration is loaded, oh my gosh, policymakers, agencies, et cetera, with woke, I mean, what would you call them? Personnel? I mean, you know, look at the Surgeon General to transit to, you know, whatever. None of these people are actually qualified in any way, shape, or form for their position. So, I mean, it makes your point for you. Is there...
Well, I was going to say that's exactly right. And in the words of the famous philosopher Yogi Berra, in theory, there is no difference in theory and practice. In practice, there is. And these theoreticians, in theory, a lot of things sound good. But when you go into practice in the real world and human nature's responses to different things, it's a whole different game. And they do not have the leadership experience. And we see it out of Washington nonstop. President Biden promised to unite the country, and in the same inaugural speech, attacked the people that voted against him. He consistently does that. No leader can succeed when you divide the team. You have to bring the team together. That's what John F. Kennedy did with the goal to put a man on the moon. He brought all Americans together, whether they voted for him or not, with a singular big goal of achievement that everyone could get behind and back. And that's leadership. And we have a void in practical leadership now in our government.
Now, you know, it wasn't just his inauguration, but that Gates of Hell speech he gave really kind of punctuated the whole, I guess, made it policy, you know, the amount of hate he has for Republicans.
Well, it's been standard procedure to do that. And when you come out and attack people who did not vote for you to begin with, why would you ever think that they would want to come alongside you and work with you? If you want people who initially voted against you to come and work with you, you have to persuade them and show them why it's in their best interest to do so. And doing that, if you can create a goal that common all Americans want to get behind, then you can bring people of both sides together to attempt to achieve that goal. World War II was a great example. All Americans wanted to win the war, regardless of political parties. And Roosevelt was elected four times because people realized winning the war was more important than the political divide.
Mm-hmm. Now, at this point, do you see... You know, Kennedy had the space program. Is there anything that a current or near future Democratic leader could pull out that would accomplish the same thing?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the space program of Kennedy. One of the things I advocated when SpaceX did their launch in August of 2020 was the opportunity and the necessity there. A chapter in Made in America called A Splash of Hope. I thought that date was one of the four most important days of aviation history, going back to December 17th, 1903, June 6, 1942, July 20th, 1969, and August 2nd, 2020. because those were days that changed history from an aviation standpoint. And President Trump created the Space Command. Our preeminence in space is imperative if we want to retain our sovereignty, because the future holds that whoever controls space will have their security preserved. And that's what happened when the Wright brothers flew. That began aviation. June 6, 1942, changed warfare with the victory at Midway from a sea versus sea to whoever controlled the air would win the sea. The space landing on the moon in 1969 changed history. And the reeminence of SpaceX in 2020 set that opportunity up with the Space Force to do something similar. And I think that program could be used to help unite Americans to preserve and protect our future.
Do you think that, let's see, Musk has got a big push to colonize. I guess, Mars is the first big project. But he wants to do it in his lifetime. Do you think a project like that would do it?
Well, it's possible, but to me, that's not as important as what's outside of our atmosphere looking in that mm-hmm. can protect us from missile launches or space ships that could launch missiles onto our country. Yeah. And defending our country, and people laughed at Star Wars with Ronald Reagan, but that was an ingenious program to protect us from people attacking us from outside our borders. And the biggest border that we can be attacked from is from space. And so we might laugh at it today, but if someone controls a space over our country, then they can subject us to their will if we can't protect ourselves.
Now, I'd heard of different things about that program. Part of it was that the whole thing was it was drummed up to get the Soviets to run up their budgets, beyond anything sustainable to catch up. So they were leaking information about things that they could maybe do at some different date in the future when they actually get technology to do this stuff, and, never letting on that they didn't have it in hand. Even if it was just that, the whole thing, it was an ingenious ploy.
I think that was a byproduct. I think there was real world efforts and products produced, but you're always in a psyops operation with your opponents, whatever you're doing as well. And that'll go on both sides through any program that goes on, but there's real world benefits. And if we can be the preeminent country in space, we can protect ourselves. And all of the other things about Mars and things like that to me are secondary to making sure we protect ourselves through national security.
Uh-huh. All right, Richard, we've got to take a quick break. I want to get back into culture a bit when we get back. I've got just the thing for that. I'm George Eliason. This is TNT Talk Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Well, 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 what have we here? There's been a pretty big drop in the global temperature for the month of November. Now, I'm not talking about the fact that it gets colder in the northern hemisphere. I'm talking about next to average. And this is quite interesting because back in January, we had this monster volcano go off near Tonga. Now, it was a big underwater volcano also. And what was fascinating about that is you could see the response in those sea surface temperatures, which I've been talking about. And of course, I'm on this whole volcano kick saying that we are totally ignoring something that could be the actual driver of whatever warming we're seeing. That's another point. But there's a lot of ash that was thrown into the air with that big volcano. It takes a while, but guess what may be starting to happen? you're starting to see cooling going on. So it'll be interesting to keep an eye on that. Of course, you could just ignore that stuff if you're one of these people that just says CO2, CO2, CO2. But people searching for the truth and reality don't ignore anything. This is meteorologist Joe Bastardi, your climate and weather watchdog for TNT, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Mama, what does the chicken say? Dog. Cat. Giraffe.
Giraffe, really? Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
What? Are you kidding me?
If you can't believe what you're hearing, then get the straight talk from us. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm back with Richard Battle, and we're talking about Made in America by Americans, not Americans. Richard, you brought up a few different presidents from the different parties. As, you know, in a very nonpartisan way, actually kind of flattering. Now, let's go back to JFK for a minute. Look at a few of his achievements. One of the things that he was really proud of was the American Peace Corps. Now, do you see setting up a program like that or revamping it as something that would be helpful in terms of, I guess, civics for the youth, to get them back into society, to make in terms of, I guess, civics for the youth, to get them back into society, to make, to bring back, I wouldn't say that, you know, it's not the Camelot I'm looking for, but culturally, making, I guess, straightening out America's moral compass, more or less?
Well, first thing is, thank you, Made in America by Americans, Not Americans is a nonpartisan book. I believe in the Constitution. I am conservative, but to me, the principles and the founding of our country are nonpartisan. And that's what I'm advocating. And I lived through the days when both parties loved the Constitution and the Declaration and lived by it. We still have the Peace Corps. We still have AmeriCorps founded by Bill Clinton. And to me, those are government founded. I'm much more into volunteerism, independently funded operations, things like junior achievement in high school. I think public service and volunteerism are great tools to teach citizenship and independence versus always setting up things to look to the government for funding. Because to me, if it's set up independently, then people learn to be self-reliant. They learn to achieve things and not look to the government. I belong to the class that grew up believing the lie that or not believing the lie that I'm from the government and I'm here to help you, because independent action to me is more important. I want companies to hire people and teach them, here's the benefit of a job flipping burgers or whatever it is. And I've written a book about the work ethic of our country as well. And I've done jobs much worse than that. Young people need to learn the value of work and the work ethic and the dignity in work. And it doesn't matter what job you have, you're contributing not only to your family and community, but to the country. And that to me is more important than any government funded operation.
You know, in that regard, here we are in 2022, and we've got a cultural abyss. And I'm not even sure if it's two sides or three sides now. Because, you know, you've got conservatives, and, you know, honestly, I think most conservatives feel the same way you do about government, constitution, limitations, and bipartisanship. But, you know, the trust isn't there anymore. That's not going to be there for a long time. what's the workaround, you know, with this? How do, because you can't just do it with one side. You're creating, just a echo circle. How do we do this?
The way I explain that is, to me, that's the swamp, and the swamp is bipartisan. There's Democrats and Republicans in the swamp. One of the things mm-hmm. President Trump exposed were the Republicans in the swamp. And so many of the talking heads you see or people that we see are, they have an agenda because they're getting paid and they're making money off the swamp. I'm an independent voice. No one's paying me to speak. I'm saying what I believe, but I believe and I stand with the founders and I stand with the people who are patriotic and love this country and want the country to succeed. That's who I stand with. I'm not paid. I'm independent. And that's the first thing we need to look at. Where are these people coming from advocating some of these different positions? And are they serving the people or are they serving themselves?
How do you get the people back, though, is, I guess, the ultimate target of the question.
I think the people are there and they're starved for leadership. That was the reason that President Trump was able to come out in 2015 and win in 2016. But as I said earlier, that group of people that voted for him, he is not the only person that can lead that group. And a leader who will come out and stand in front of the people and represent them and represent the founding, I think is a winning combination because none of us want to be imprisoned or enslaved by our government. And that's the path we're on. And only way we get our independence back is to get citizen represented leadership at all levels and have people who will be public servants for a few years and willingly step aside and let the next generation leaders come in and not think it's their God-given right to serve until they die.
Now, this is going to be an interesting question because you've got all this rancor against Donald Trump. It's been there almost as from the second that he announced his original candidacy. Okay. Well, actually, they pushed him up first and then afterwards. But as a constitutionalist, as a bipartisan, as somebody that believes in a whole American government, you know, that's supposed to work together, that's supposed to put America ahead of themselves, their own interests. You know, we're talking about Congress, all three branches. What are your actual thoughts on Donald Trump? And because we're looking at a very his persona is like a lightning strike. Is he what America needs right now?
Well, I think that his New York style is significantly different than my Texas style would be. And his style has put off some people who might want to follow him because of his style. And I look past the style and look at the substance when I look at any candidate. And there's been people that I love their style, but I did not like their policies. And people that I didn't like their style, but I love their policies. And to me, policies are the most important thing. But as I said earlier, a group of people who want an America preeminence policy, he is not the only person that can lead that group. And that group will need leadership beyond his, yours, and my lifetime as well into the future. And so we need many people to step up and lead that type of movement to succeed at all levels of our government.
Okay. What do you think someone like Tip O'Neill would think of Donald Trump today?
Well, I don't think Tip O'Neill
was the Speaker of the House. Speaker of the House,
yeah,
in Ronald Reagan's time.
Yes. And I don't think Tip O'Neill would like a Donald Trump or anyone who espoused those values, because he represented the swamp, an ever expanding swamp at the time he was speaker back in the 80s. At the time of Reagan, they talked about he and Reagan fighting about policy and then having a drink together. Well, I think that was overrated. I think they fought and disagreed more than they ever spent time drinking together, although they cordially tried to do that. Today, the pretense, I think, is over, and it's pretty much fights all the time between the two different sides, or as you say, three sides, because there are swamp Republicans who line up with the swamp Democrats most of the time.
Now, I asked you about O'Neill for a reason, because it leads right back into Reagan. Do you think that Reagan would look at Trump fondly, or, you know, in terms of, okay, I may not like your style, but here you are in substance. This is what you're trying to accomplish. What do you think his thoughts would be on that?
Well, I think it'd be mixed. I think Reagan would appreciate Trump's effort to make America prosperous and more free than we are now, and to downsize government. I think he would appreciate that. I think he'd totally disagree with the style, because Reagan had his own unique style, which I like that style much better than the more combative style. But I also think that Trump has been attacked more viciously from many more sides than Reagan ever was as well.
Than anybody else has.
It's going from what used to be the Marcus of Queensbury rules of boxing to what we have in wrestling here in Texas called a Texas cage match, where you have the chain link fence around the wrestling ring and both people go in and only one comes out. And so the combat, if you will, of the political world is totally different today than it was back in Reagan's day.
I look back in history, and the only U.S. president that even comes close that I could find was actually FDR. He took an insane amount of heat from Republicans and Democrats, and it was actually conservatives that rescued some of the stuff that he needed to get done, because his own party wouldn't do it.
You're correct. Because in those days, there were conservative as well as liberal Democrats. And what was interesting, after the Civil War in the United States, Texas voted straight Democrat for 100 years. And very similarly, in Texas, you had two political parties. You had liberal Democrats and conservative Democrats. And then over time, all the conservative Democrats became Republican, and the state became Republican over time as well. And so I think that's what happened during the Roosevelt time, was the inner parties between the Democrats and the conservative Democrats did line up with the Republicans.
So, I mean, at the same time frame, you had what we call liberal Democrats today trying to push us into the war with Hitler instead of against Hitler. And that's part of what he was fighting. Now, do you see Pelosi's leaving? Do you see things starting? Will they even out in Congress, or do you think this is going to keep rolling like it is? We've got 3 minutes left.
Well, I think we're on a track to continue what we're getting. There's nothing in the election that's changed that to this point. And as long as we have the career politicians who put their reelection and political power ahead of serving the people from both parties, we're going to continue to get what we get. And term limits would help this, because Pelosi's animosity toward the other side has been built up over years to where she is so hardened that she refuses to listen to the other side. There's people on the Republican side who've been there so long in the same boat. It takes all of us, and we need to maintain our principles. President Jefferson said it best when he said, in matters of taste, swim with the current. in matters of principle stand like a rock. Well, too often today, we're not only standing like rocks on principle, but we're standing like rocks on taste. And we've got to be able to find things that we can have common ground on so that the government can function. Because if it doesn't function, then whoever's president will exercise more and more power to the point that we have authoritarian rule.
Richard, where can we find your book, Made in America by Americans and Not Americans? Where is it available?
Well, my website is richardbattle.com. I can be contacted through that as well. All nine of my books are available there, as well as Amazon and other booksellers. This volume is also available in Kindle and audiobook as well.
Thank you so much, sir, for coming by today. It's been Richard V. Battle and Made in America by Americans, Not Americans. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you so much, George. God bless America.